music and talk radio about all things, all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony.
And good Wednesday morning to you, and welcome to Intravenous here on Campus Community Radio, CJSF 90.1 FM, where we broadcast from the top of Burnaby Mountain on the unceded ancestral territories of the Holkmeenam and Squamish speaking people. I am Robin. I'm one of your hosts.
And I'm Rebecca.
And how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. I mean, I'm a bit tired, but I think that's the case of this every morning, especially in winter when you're waking up and it's like it's freezing and you just want to stay like huddle in your duvet, not leave your bed.
Right.
And then to do a trek up here. But it was eerily quiet up here today because obviously I haven't been in the studio that much these past 2 weeks, and I forgot that university students are going home and for Christmas and they're all done, and to see the campus is empty again.
Yeah,
it's all eerily quiet up here.
Yeah, it strangely is one of my favorite times, because sometimes the hustle and bustle can be a little wild, and you know, if you have any kind of sensitive system to all of those energies, can be a lot.
Yeah.
And so I quite like catching the bus when there's hardly anybody on it.
It's like, and you actually get to sit down on the bus.
Yeah.
Thinking, wow, there's no queue of people.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So we've got a packed show of material that we've brought, or that we will bring to your ears this morning. There was an incident. Well, there are continual incidences, I think, on campus here, as well as other campuses, that have to do with harassment. And so over the last couple of weeks, Rebecca and I have been talking a little bit about how to address that, and you know, what the sort of particulars are. So we're going to be talking about harassment as well as non-disclosure agreements, because those become potentially part of how and why people don't come forward about harassment. I mean, there's all sorts of reasons why they don't, but you know, in the event that you're asked to sign one for any particular reason, and harassment and discrimination is pretty high on the list, it can really have effects on your personhood. So that's the show today. Before we get right into the thick of it, I know that you've brought some music. I was not that well prepared, but you've got some songs lined up. So let's hear one of those, and then we'll sort of breathe into it and come back.
I would probably start with, it's a song I played it on my open mics and I really enjoyed listening to it, but it's called Rage in My Veins, and it's by the Boston artist Bex, and it's off of, I think, her album Stay Moist. But the song just reminds me of kind of these feminist rage anthems that are getting so popular in social media. And you're hearing a lot about like women kind of standing up and using like lyrics as a way of stripping down the patriarchy and all other things. And I think a lot have come out since the Roe v. Wade was overturned. It really picked up a pace of women using music as a way of speaking out. And not necessarily that is the story behind her lyrics, but I just thought the title Rage in My Veins and just the overall like beat of the song, it just reminds me of these feminist rage songs. So I thought it was kind of appropriate for Intravenous.
Yes.
So yeah.
And maybe you need a little gumption to get going this morning.
Yeah.
As do you and I.
Yeah, so, stop firing up in the studio.
Here we go.
I've got rage in my veins. Please don't make me explain. Something wild inside is taking over my mind. I know I can lose control, but my body needs to know. Who put rage in my veins? It's taking over my soul. I got rage in my veins. Please don't make me explain. Sorry, I'm not myself. It's like I'm somebody else. Think I should be left alone, but I'm not safe for my own. Who put rage in my veins? It's taking over my soul. Every day I fight the feeling, every day I fight the feeling. Maybe I could break free, stop the clock, let my heart breathe. Make amends before I start to bleed. Something up there making me believe that I got rage in my veins. Please don't make me explain. It's trying to tear us apart, but I keep holding on to whatever little piece I found. In your arms I try to keep it down for you. Oh, for you. Every day I fight the feeling, every day I fight the feeling. Something wild inside is trying to show me the light. I'm just fighting to be whole in a broken world.
The artist is Bex, and that was a track called Rage in My Veins here on Intravenous. I'm Robin.
And I'm Rebecca.
And we are hosting the show this morning on harassment and non-disclosure agreements. And I'm just going to jump right in here with just to start our conversation, because you know, statistics are always a good, well, sometimes they can be a good framework to sort of get an idea of what are we actually talking about here. And, you know, in what numbers are we talking about things here? And so I found some information. There was actually a study done by Statistics Canada in 2019. So it's 5 years old now, but I suspect that the values aren't a whole lot different, maybe a percentage or two. And if you've been listening to Intravenous over the past month or so, and we've been talking about gender-based violence, you'll know that gender-based violence has gone up rather than down. And so it's very likely that these percentages have gone up in relation to that reality.
Yeah.
Right? Which is really disappointing. But here we are. There were also some percentages that I found specifically and so what we're looking at is different kinds of harassment. And so one of them is humiliating behavior. And that is the most common type of harassment on colleges and university campuses. And that's experienced by 22% of women and 14% of men. Mm. Verbal abuse experienced by 20% of women and 13% of men. Unwanted sexual attention and sexual harassment. Women are more likely to experience this type of harassment than men, but they're certainly not excluded from that, right? And I think if you are fluid with your gender expression in any kind of way, right, whether you're more more feminized or more masculinized as a man or a woman, or, you know, somewhere in the middle, that is more likely to be the case, right?
Yeah.
And I know that somewhere that I read, you know, harassment or, you know, being discriminated against can be that you're not being referred to as the pronouns that you prefer, right? So it comes right down to those things as well. Gender-based discrimination, sort of what I just talked about. Substantial amount of gender-based discrimination exists in relation to gender identity, sexual orientation, has also been reported mostly by students, but I would imagine that, you know, within the tiers of professorhood, there's also that. Dating violence, four out of five, let's just breathe that in. 4 out of 5 undergraduate students reported experience dating violence.
I'm looking at the same statistic because I had that one as well, and it's shocking.
You know, and it's it brings up what we talked about a couple of weeks ago with the idea of the campaign slogan for the 10 days. Can't even get the number right there. 16 days of activism against gender-based violence, and the slogan is no more excuses, or no excuses.
Hashtag no excuse,
right? And when I see that number, 4 out of 5, I'm like, there's no excuse for that.
Exactly, yeah. And it's when we were having that discussion as well about intimate partner violence and how with gender-based violence, I can't remember, it was during the 16 days of activism that we had this discussion, but that it's more often than not a family member or a close member. It's not a stranger. It's someone that they know that it happened, that it's occurring in. And the fact that it's four and five, it's dating violence. It's like, that's the person that you're meant to be able to trust. That's the person you're choosing to date. That's the person you're choosing to be like the closest to you. And the statistic to me is, it's mind-boggling. how that it's that high.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You wonder why people want to date.
Yeah.
Or, you know, that there's this this tendency, I think, to where dating is kind of falling off.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with statistics like that, it's no wonder.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I have a statistic in here as well from last year. So in 2023, 1 in 2 post-secondary students had been subjected to at least one instance of sexual harassment in either internships, co-ops, or other learning settings. 1 in 2.
Okay. And I have a similar statistic where 47% of post-secondary students witnessed or experienced in the past year some kind of discrimination based on gender, gender identity, mm-hmm. or sexual orientation.
Mm-hmm. We have all of this awareness and we have all of these, like, I don't know, campaigns, marches, honorary days, where we specifically talk about how this is not okay, and yet the statistics are not showing that there is anything coming from that. To me, it just seems like, especially recently with us talking about the rise in gender-based violence, it just seems to be getting worse rather than even like stagnating.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Mm. These statistics change if you are a person with disability, Indigenous, or part of a sexual minority group, then your risk increases. And sometimes it's exponentially increasing. Mm-hmm. Post-secondary faculty and researchers with disabilities, for instance, are 1.8 times more likely to experience harassment than their colleagues without a disability. And women with disabilities experience harassment at 52% versus 38% to men.
Oh my goodness.
Right? And if you're Indigenous, 40% of Indigenous faculty and researchers in post-secondary institutions experience some form of harassment in 2019, compared with 27% of non-Indigenous responders. So, again, huge, right?
Yeah. And we go back again to what we were discussing last week of what is actually tangibly being done. If these are the statistics, what responses, what solutions, what is actually being addressed that will be a tangible solution to it to help bring that number way, way, way down?
I guess the other thing that's interesting before we get into to maybe pondering that question, I think it's also a rhetorical question because I certainly don't have the answers to that. if I did and I was queen of the world, then we'd be living a whole different set of statistics here.
Yeah.
But interestingly, women who responded to the Statistics Canada poll that they did to gather this information, responded 73% more likely to take some form of action against their harasser than the men who responded. Mm-hmm. In cases where it did not involve unwanted sexual attention or sexual harassment, then there was no difference in the percentage.
Yeah.
And so women are still way less likely to come forward about assault and harassment and discrimination that is sexualized and of a sexual nature, because we get taken to task about our behavior rather than the perpetrator's behavior.
Yeah. You get questioned about, oh, were you drinking in this scenario by any chance? Doesn't matter if you're, if the perpetrator was drinking, but you as the victim, were you drinking? Or were you wearing something that was maybe exposing a bit too much skin? Or were you like looking at him for a long period of time or something? It's always like you're wearing, what you're wearing, what you were doing, how you were holding yourself as a person, that will get stripped apart. Whereas the perpetrator would just be like, oh, but he was just there. That's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, remember that we're talking about this on campuses.
Yeah.
Canadian campuses. Mm. And, you know, it's important to sort of recognize and realize that campuses are just a microcosm of society at large. You know, we're not a special case.
Yeah.
You know, it's not an isolated incident because it happened on campus and, oh, it's, you know, students who don't know better. No, it's a reflection of what happens in the broader community. And I found a quote. Amy Conwell is a representative of postdoctoral fellows, graduate students, and other contract workers at the University of Toronto. And she says, quote, discrimination and harassment is systemic, cultural, and a well-known secret. She says these allegations and the Statistics Canada findings, which we just looked at, raise important questions. What does academia foster or enable people who are predatory to be in positions of power? And why does academia silence folks who seek to speak out about it? And, you know, those I think are really burning and important questions that, again, I think are a bit rhetorical because I don't have the answers to them, and I don't, you know, I don't even have contact with the people who are making those kinds of decisions. But when the zeitgeist, I guess, of what gets rationalized in our minds as common behavior and, you know, what gets sanctioned as just social nature gets brought into the university, then, yeah, it's going to play out just like it does in any other avenue of society.
Yeah.
And that it is systemic, cultural, and a well-known secret, just like it is everywhere else in society.
Yeah, I really like that phrase, a well-known secret, because it really feels that way in that, I would say, speaking generally, that harassment is well-known. Like, it's known that it happens, but it's not spoken about, I think, enough in terms of like either specific cases or being brought to media's attention enough, particularly, I would say, on campuses and post-secondary institutions. So it is like a secret that is happening. I mean, we came across this topic of harassment because of an incident that happened on campus, and it's the fact that that was coming through a Reddit post. And like students talking about it because they're hearing things and rumors and stories circulate that way. It wasn't through like the news or anything being published. So it was kind of like a little secret going around. So I really like that phrase about like harassment being a well-known secret, because it ties in quite well with what we're going to talk about later with NDAs and almost like you're having to be silenced in order to settle the the issue. So it's a well-known secret.
For sure. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. There's also, you know, in the article that Amy Conwell is quoted in speaking about this, there's someone who also speaks to this idea of being silenced, but choosing to remain silent or not filing a formal complaint about the incident that happened because, quote unquote, they had to continue working together. Mm. And calculated in the long run, they thought that it would be better to try to patch things up in other ways.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that having to sort of swallow the thing that's happened to you and, you know, remain in this working relationship with someone who just makes you feel ugh.
Yeah.
You know, like every time mm-hmm. you have to interact with them, how much stress does that put on your body?
Oh, yeah.
And your mind and your emotional mm. state of well-being and all of the things, yeah. right? You're just,
yeah.
like, talk about dread in the morning.
Yeah, as if it wasn't enough just trying to get up and go into work.
Right?
Yeah.
And so there's real implications, mm-hmm. real life implications about the things that we're talking about.
Yeah.
When it happens and we don't have those avenues and we don't have the vehicles that support us
mm.
in being able to come forward and actually see, I'm air quoting, justice.
Yeah.
Because that's a pretty loose
mm-hmm.
and a hard word to navigate in some of this stuff too, right?
Yeah.
Like penalization doesn't work per se, but mm. we don't have enough of a restorative process in some ways also to, you know, really repair mm. damage.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I think as well with that, it's that women are, well, anyone that's been sexually harassed sort of in the workplace or anything, you're having to weigh up the cons of what will happen if you do speak out in terms of like your career trajectory. Like if you are just starting out and you're thinking, what would my future be with the company? What would be my future in this career? Maybe not with this company, but with other companies. If I go in for interviews, are they going to call back this company for a reference? And they're going to say, oh no, she's trouble to work with because we had this and this issues with her or him. That you're having to weigh up, is it worth me speaking out and not staying silent for what my future could look like? And I think that's, again, linking back to NDAs, that's good. That's a very big part of why NDAs get signed in terms of it's looking at how is this going to affect my future in terms of being employed. If I don't have a job, what's going to happen to me? It's going to cost more. Me speaking out will cost more than me staying silent.
Right.
In yeah. terms of as well with justice being served, because we've seen it in so many cases, high profile cases that have come about where it's taken years, and you see it with the hashtag Me Too movement. Right when it was getting started, the amount of celebrities that came forward and said they were blacklisted from movie projects, directors' projects, because they were told they were difficult to work with because they came forward. And there is one actress, I want to say her name is Ashley Judd, I could be very wrong with that, but she specifically came forward and said, I was blacklisted from so many projects and was told I was difficult to work with, and she said it ruined her career coming forward. But I believe she doesn't regret coming forward, but it's the fact that you have such high profile women saying it took a lot to come forward because it impacted me horrifically,
right,
in terms of career prospects.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like you're just constantly weighing up, is it worth it in terms of like, do I believe that justice will be served? Do I believe in that like it will be worth something coming out and speaking about it, or